Welcome back to the Bryant Park Dance Project from NPR News. We're always online at npr.org. Joining me now, an all-star team of people to share the most emailed, most viewed, most whispered about, most... what's another verb in the past tense? Runned?
Runned.
Interneted.
Happened.
Most thing. Most thing on the internet. The most. That was Corva, I heard. Corva Coleman, is that you?
It's me.
Corva, can you hear me? What do you got?
I'm waiting for you to sing, but you're not doing it. But I'll tell you what I read in the Denver Post today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Elian Gonzalez?
I do. I remember him well. What an extraction that was.
Well, let me tell you, for those of you who can't remember, he was the boy who floated to the United States on the inner tube. It was Thanksgiving Day, 1999. And then there was this huge international custody dispute between his relatives here in Florida and his dad back in Cuba. Well, it was all settled eventually after this long, torturous thing, including agents raiding the relatives' home in Florida. There was that award-winning photograph of the... agent, holding the gun. Oh, my God, it was so dramatic.
And who can forget Maris Lysis Gonzalez? Oh, what great clips she gave us in 2000.
She had face, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Elian ends up going back to Cuba with his dad. So what's happened since? Well, what's happened since, snap, he's joined the Cuban Young Communist League. He says he will never let down Cuban leaders Fidel and Raul Castro. He's 14.
How old do you have to be? I'm sorry.
14.
He's 14. He's 14.
The minimum age?
It's a young communist league.
I'm envisioning a very cute young communist league.
Matt?
Well, this has nothing to do with the story, but I was walking in and Zaina, our video editor, you know, we film the most, right?
Yes, we did.
And she's, where's Corva sitting?
Where
is she?
I'm nowhere.
It's like, I can't point any cameras at Corva. She was very confused.
Corva, can you film yourself and maybe send it up to us and we'll splice it in?
I'll have one of my kids do it. It'll be completely unflattering.
All right. Well, thanks for the Elian Gonzalez update. Elian Gonzalez, young communist. Dan.
Hey, guys. I got a most emailed here from Yahoo News. Study. Chimps calm each other with hugs, kisses.
Aww.
That's right.
Sweet.
It's not just for humans anymore. It is an interesting study. Basically, what it says is that if two chimps are engaged in sort of aggressive behavior, the victim of the aggression will often be consoled by a third chimp. And that consolation, which usually takes the form of hugs and or kisses, will have a positive impact on the victim of the aggression. That chimp will have a reduction in stress and stress behaviors because it received that consolation, that hug and a kiss, just as sort of picks humans up off the ground when they're not.
Do chimps send emails that say XOXOX?
They do, actually, yes.
Oh, I was just thinking, thank God for Trisha. What would we do?
But I actually love, one of the things I love about this article in particular is the way they managed to take a totally clinical approach to emotions, right? Oh, to all emotions. Yeah. Best sentence in the article. Dr. DeWall suggested that this evidence of empathy in apes is, quote, perhaps equivalent to what in human children is called sympathetic concern.
I want that guy as a dad.
Right.
As a human child, right. I have seen evidence of your concern, and
get
therefore...
Get this child 50 cc's of sympathetic concern.
And come here, because I'm going to pick the fleas out of your hair.
On the downside of the chimp's hugs and kisses, the kissed chimp is being kissed by a chimp.
That's true.
So that could be somewhat offensive. So we heard from Trisha. Let's hear more.
Yes, I have Google Trends. It was number one when I woke up this morning. It's been pushed down because Firefox 3 download searches have replaced that, because that's apparently being released today.
Yep.
But what was number one
night
this morning is the name Javon Walker.
Mm-hmm.
He is a wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders, and he was found unconscious on a street in Las Vegas yesterday, early in the morning. Police think he was the victim of a robbery. He was taken to the hospital unconscious with, quote, significant injuries. Mm-hmm. They're investigating what happened to him. One of the related searches to his name is orbital fracture. That was one of the injuries he
his
reportedly
eye
had. It's when the bones around your eye socket get broken.
Now, what time did this happen?
I'm not sure what time it happened. I believe he was found at about 7 a.m.
Had Dan Pashman left Las Vegas at that
ooh
time?
Good question.
Ow.
I don't know.
I'm going to throw the flag for unnecessary Pashman bashing.
Yeah, that was a little rough. Ooh. Anyway, can I just get back to Javon? Because people might want to know how he's doing.
How is Javon doing?
Police spokesman.
How's Javon doing?
He's in fair condition.
Fair?
Yeah.
That's terrible. I don't want to hear that.
I'm sorry.
Fair is bad, right? You want to hear better than fair.
It's not as good as good.
Yeah.
How did he look when you saw him, Pashman?
Before or after?
Oh!
Ouch!
Columbo! Ian, rather than just try to net Pashman into a string of his own lies, will you contribute something positive to the conversation?
Let me ask you this, Dan Pashman. Have you been in British Columbia recently?
I have not.
We'll be checking on that. This is a story that I just love. This is a most emailed on the CBC, and this marks the third time I've talked about it on the Bryant Park Project. I talked about it when they found the third foot on the beach in British Columbia. I talked about it when they found the fourth foot, and they just found a fifth foot.
Is this the Footsteps on the Beach poem when you were with me?
No, it is not. You will recall that the first 4 feet were wearing tennis shoes, running shoes. They were right feet. This one is a left, which has some people wondering what's going on. And I think, you know, we've been assuming that these feet were removed forcibly. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, otherwise known as the Mounties, say there's no evidence the feet were severed, removed from the victim's legs by force. An oceanographer says the feet could have been severed or detached from the bodies on their own. I've never had that happen, but
what,
I guess it's
possible. What, they just walk off? They
depart?
They cease to belong to a
hole? They do, and that's why I like to keep an extra 4 or 5 feet around. Yeah.
Apparently those...
Oh, really, Dan?
Apparently those feet are made for walking.
Here's my favorite part of the article. The investigator, Charlene Brooks, says, "We're certainly not discounting the possibility that this may be linked to the other recovered feet." So they think the foot.
Oh, wow. So they made that connection. There's a chance there's a connection.
Yeah.
But wait, that doesn't make sense. It's the left foot. It's totally different.
Yeah, that's not even the same crime.
Terrible police work up there. All right, Matt, let's go right to you with the most piece.
All right, from the most emailed stories on the Big NPR, it's a story about the record of Senator John McCain. Barack Obama has been saying that a McCain presidency would be another Bush term because of his voting policy, his past voting record. So NPR's David Wellner took up the challenge to report on McCain's long record and how it gels with the president's, and he's going to do it in 4 minutes starting now.
If you examine Senator John McCain's record during the Bush presidency, you'll find he's been even more loyal to the president than to his fellow GOP senators. But McCain's also been seriously at odds with the president on several key issues, and Claremont McKenna College congressional expert Jack Pitney expects that would continue to be the case in a McCain presidency.
John McCain's position on the environment, for instance, is very different from that of the Bush administration, and one would expect a lot more attention to issues such as global warming. McCain obviously has been a supporter of campaign finance reform and would continue to do so in the White House.
McCain also backed stem cell funding, which Mr. Bush opposed. And when the president supported a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, McCain voted against it. But McCain's greatest act of apostasy came during the first year of this Bush presidency. That's when he was one of just two Senate Republicans to vote against the president's $1.3 trillion tax cut package.
We are about to enact one of the most massive tax cuts in memory or history, and we do not have any idea how much money is going to be devoted to defense spending and how much is going to be left over for it.
2 years later, on the day before the U.S. invaded Iraq, McCain declared on the Senate floor he could not vote for a second package of tax cuts worth $350 billion, most of which went to wealthy investors.
I cannot in good conscience vote in favor of tax cuts, irrespective of their size or to which segment of the population they are targeted.
But the tax cuts were hugely popular with President Bush's Republican base, even as budget surpluses collapsed into enormous deficits. As the president prepared for his 2004 reelection bid, he told a crowd the 10-year tax plans approved by Congress still fell short.
Congress needs to make all aspects of the tax code permanent so people can plan their businesses and their lives.
McCain remained the stubborn holdout. That same year, here's what he told NBC's Meet the Press.
I voted against the tax cuts because of the disproportional amount that went to the wealthiest Americans. I would clearly support not extending those tax cuts in order to help address the deficit.
But once McCain began campaigning to be President Bush's successor, he dramatically changed his stance on those tax cuts.
I'll make the Bush tax cuts permanent. Reduce taxes on 25 million middle-class families.
That's from a radio ad the McCain campaign aired in January. Since then, McCain has continued proclaiming his newfound fealty to the Bush tax cuts. Fellow Republican Senator John Thune of South Dakota, who's often mentioned as a possible McCain running mate, applauds the about-face.
I think he recognizes that, you know, to allow these tax cuts to expire would be the equivalent of a tax increase at a time when the economy is really struggling. And so he believes, and I think rightly so, that extending the tax relief is important to, you know, the economy expanding and continuing to create jobs.
Obviously, this is McCain moving in the direction of Bush.
Again, Claremont McKenna's Jack Pitney.
John McCain's position can either be described as a flip-flop if you're opposed to him, or as an evolution if you're a supporter of him. But if he had remained a strong critic of tax cuts, it's quite possible he wouldn't have won the Republican nomination in the first place. There are a lot of economic conservatives who regard his earlier position as a deal-breaker.
McCain is even proposing new tax cuts, with the biggest benefits going to the top 0.1% of households, with little relief for the bottom 3/5 of taxpayers. In a phone call with reporters, Jason Furman, who's Obama's new top economic advisor, thwacked McCain thusly.
People sometimes describe John McCain as a third term of George Bush. I think when it comes to tax policy, that's actually unfair to President Bush. John McCain's tax policy is far more radical.
At the very least, it's a radical departure from the John McCain who voted against both Bush tax cuts.
That's NPR's David Wellner reporting.